Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by I Give On, the Giver's Marketplace, and they can be found at igiveon.com. Our guest tonight is Itzhak Beery, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So how is your day today, Bob?
Okay, and I was strumming through the newspapers this week and came upon an article. Cut it out here. There's a guy named Edmund Quinones in New York. He takes the same route home from work every day. Mm-hmm. And then on Wednesday took a detour and came upon a car that was engulfed in flames and wound up saving the person's life. I thought it was interesting the way he describes it. He said that he was making his way home from a meeting in New Jersey, and he believes the grace of God led him to the scene of an accident on, and it gives the name of the road, Town Line Road, where police say he and a firefighter rescued a driver from a burning SUV. He said, I think it was God that told me to go down that road and take a shortcut that day. This is obviously not the first time that we have talked about people for some unknown reason have this strong feeling or hear a voice or something tells them to deviate, like don't make a right like you normally do, make a left, and that's what happened. But what struck me is that, he attributes it to a direct communication from God. I mean, a lot of people would say that they don't know where it came from, but I was wondering if I were to get in touch with Edmund, I wouldn't be surprised if he told me that he didn't believe in telepathy or he didn't believe in intuition, but this was purely, that's only a God's realm.
I think if you're talking about people who are religious, that's the answer that you're going to get. I think people who are not religious, who have had experiences like this, start to search and research and learn that telepathy exists. They learn that there is an unseen world and that they're not the only ones that this happened to. Right. It's nice to think that you're one of the prophets that are written down in the Bible and all this kind of stuff, and you're special and you've got your direct line to God. And if that's the way he wants to live his life, and he did this great thing, terrific.
Well, listen, of course, if you believe in creation and God, I mean, then we're all part of this universal, entity, and telepathy and intuition is part of it, that the universal designer or God would have, that's the way he made us. It's part of who we are, and that's how we were meant to be. And we're all connected. So, of course, in situations like this, we don't know. It could have been a guide or a deceased relative that was giving him this information to save this man's life, or it could be...
Well, let's take it from this point of view. You're out on a boat in the middle of a lake, and the boat springs a leak, and you know you're never going to make it back to shore. So right away, you summon help from an unknown source, whether it be God or whoever's out there listening to me or praying or whatever it is.
Right.
And suddenly the boat either stops leaking or you're no longer in the middle of the lake. You're near the shore and you can jump out. Whatever the force is, that responded to your need for help is that same universal connection that we all have. Whether it results from prayer or if it results from need or it results from a higher source watching over us, we really don't know. But right. There is something that yeah. goes on that comes to the aid of people when they need help.
Right. And if you're the recipient of this, you might try to make sense of it, and you put it in your own frame of reference. Like you mentioned, if you were religious, you might attribute that to God. If you had a deceased loved one on the other side, you might attribute it to that. You might attribute it to just good luck, you know.
Yeah, but who I want to talk to is not the guy who saved him. I want to talk to the guy who was saved. What was going through your head? What were you saying? What were you thinking? Were you praying?
And perhaps he was sending out a telepathic SOS.
He was sending
SOS
the message, and
this guy
got the message.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there are endless possibilities, but all the possibilities lead to the same thing, you know, a universal connectedness that a lot of people dismiss. I see you picked out an article there about Kirk Douglas.
Yeah, I have two. Kirk's a great guy, and he just celebrated back in April, I think it was, his 100th birthday.
Amazing.
And that's amazing. He does admit, though, being 100 is a bit sad. He misses his buddies. And that's understandable.
They're all gone.
But he tells the story, and the reason he's telling the story is because he's written his memoir, finally. At age 100, I believe it came out in May. But he tells the story of way back 60 years ago when he was a youngster and he and his new wife were expecting a baby and Anne was pregnant and he was due to fly via a private jet with the producer, Mike Todd, who at that point was married to Elizabeth Taylor. And they were going to get on the plane to go at have a command meeting or performance or whatever it was with then President Harry Truman. That night, Anne begged him, and in fact, it turned into a huge fight because she did not want him getting on that plane. She had a bad feeling, and he really felt you can't tell the president no. You know, he really wanted, but as it turned out, he ended up deciding to not go. And as we know historically, that plane crashed and Mike Todd died and Elizabeth Taylor became a widow. So
another example of following your feeling. And how many people, you know, would react that way and feel so strongly about it that they would, you know, warn, you know, their loved ones not to take a specific action? And how many would simply initially pay attention, but dismiss it because they question, well, this couldn't possibly be.
Or just totally blow it off. And I remember back when the plane that remains missing went down. I think that was 2 years. Is it 2 years already that plane went down? Malaysia Airlines.
Yeah.
And there was a woman getting her children onto that plane. And one of the children said, I can't get on this plane, the plane's going to crash. And she said, it's foolish, get on the plane, and the plane crashed.
Yeah.
So there are people who to this day dismiss something like that rather than taking it seriously.
Yeah, and you know, and that's one of the values of talking about these things. You know, maybe people will heed what their gut is telling them, but you know, who says consciousness doesn't reside in the gut, right? So
I think it does.
Well, as you mentioned, we have a great guest tonight, Itzhak Beery, a wonderful shamanic healer, and we're going to be talking with him after the break. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Wind Bridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
In our guest tonight is Itzhak Beery. Our sponsor is I Give On, the Giver's Marketplace, and they can be found at igiveon.com. Bob?
And Itzhak Beery is an internationally recognized shamanic healer and teacher. He's the founder of shamanportal.org. He's the co-founder of the New York Shamanic Circle. He's trained extensively with other elders from South and North America. He's on the board of the New York Open Center. And his work has been featured in the New York Times, films, TV, and webinars. And he is the author of two terrific books, one, The Gift of Shamanism, Visionary Power, Ayahuasca Dreams, and Journeys to Other Realms, and Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. And his website is itzhakberry.com, and that's itzhakberry.com. Welcome to the show, Itzhak.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure and honor.
It's our honor, and I think a good place to start, I think it's fair to say that there are many misconceptions about shamanism and the role that shamans play. So perhaps a good place to start is maybe you could give us a good or a brief explanation of what is a shaman.
Well, you know, in every culture, in every society, there is a person who uses plants and herbs and minerals and stones and spirit or energy, water to heal other people and to do ceremonies and such. In many cultures, every culture has a different name for that. As in some places, it's curandero, way wishi, we achaks, and many different names. The word shaman is kind of like a general word, that kind of like a Coca-Cola for all soft drinks. But the practices are very unique for each culture, very different one. And it's really developed throughout all the human existence on this earth for, you know, some people say 750,000 years, by the human needs to heal each other and to communicate with each other, to sit around a fire and share stories. You know, the fear that we today feel, that some people feel about that, is because of the 2,000 years of a church and synagogue religions doctrines that wanted to take away the power of individuals to practice connection, direct connection to spirit or to the energy world, and give it to centralize it in institutions like church or synagogue or priest or special different doctors. So, but it's the but it's really the practice of shamanism is the ability of people to reconnect, to connect with nature, to work with nature, to bring healing to their bodies. And in many cultures, it's differently. You know, like some people use Chinese medicine, and which is also shamanic in nature, or Qigong or yoga or meditation. This is all part of different shamanic traditions of different cultures. But today, we kind of like put it all in one big, all of those practices, we label them in one word. And in, I think that it started in the 1930s. The word shaman actually came from Tungus in Mongolia, Siberia, from the Tungus tribe. And that word, there are many different meanings for that in different cultures. But in their cultures, according to a Tungus shaman, it really means the keeper of the fire, which is the idea that a shaman is the keeper of the stories, the essence of the community, the spiritual well-being, the stories, the culture, the singing, the tradition, and also the physical well-being of a community. So it's the keeper of the fire, which is like a very beautiful role. And as in 1930, this word started to spread around in the around the world. And today, even shamans in people who practice it in the Amazon or in the Andes or in like very far away places, they're all using the same word. But it actually came at that time to replace words that the church put in, like evil or like brujería or all kind of derogatory name that was put on people who knew how to work with plants and with different medicine.
Mm. And I know that you and others you take these incredible journeys and you bring back knowledge that you then use to heal people. But you also wrote in your book that shamanism and shamanic healing are not necessarily spiritual practices in themselves. So some people might not understand that. They would think that it has to be a spiritual practice by nature. So what did you really mean by that?
Well, shamans all over the world using the practice is to heal other people. And if the healing is not successful, that means that what they use is not correct. They have to find another tool. So all the tools that we use in the shamanic healing work needs to have a practical manifestation in this world. In other words, if you come for me with headache, and I can just talk to you about the spiritual aspect of it, and the headache still persists, then it's really, it doesn't help you, right? And since shamans usually judge by the performance, like doctors, like any other profession, you would not recommend other people to come to see me if there was no healing. So I have to find ways, tools to change your headache or your pain and take it away. So the essence of the work is very practical. So all the shamanic healing has to have a practical aspect of it. Have to change the reality or the physical reality of the person who is sick or depressed or angry. That said, we are using spiritual, what we call spiritual tools, like communications with spirit, with ancestors. We don't recognize that there is only tangible tools. There are also spirit-based tools, or we talk about it in terms of the seen and unseen world. So in the unseen world, we believe that there are spirits. And those spirits are from ancestor, or like a mother who held her fingernails in her daughter's shoulder, and that caused that girl for chronic pain in her shoulder. And until I went and I communicate with her mother, and I convinced her to release that hold on her daughter's shoulder, and then the pain disappeared. And that was like 50 years of pain. Huh. So it is, we are using spiritual or unseen energy tools, but it's not necessarily in the purpose of being enlightened, like in meditation.
Yeah, I totally get that. You know, we see that there's always a debate that we have in among mediums, you know, in mediumship. You know, is that in and of itself a spiritual practice, or maybe it's just an ability that's inherent to us all, and we all have the capability of connecting if we use the right tools. And you mentioned in your book specific tools and ceremonies that you and other shamans used to reach these unseen worlds, these other realms. I mean, what are some of the tools that people can try themselves to enter into these altered states of consciousness?
Well, in all over the world, the shamans are using different tools to get into a trance-like state of mind or shamanic consciousness, which means is to lower the vibrations of the brain to a level where they can be in both realities all at the same time. we call it the gates of consciousness. So you can in nature, we look at it as, maybe the listener can also experience that when they are watching sunset or sunrise or midday or midnight, there is a moment where the worlds are opening, and there is like a big, you can sneak into that world. And so the same thing happened when shamans get into shamanic consciousness, or a way of journeying into the spirit world. And you can do that with the drumming, you can do that with rattling, you can do it with dance, you can do it with chants, you can do it with movement or sound. There are many different ways that shamans use to bring themselves and enter into that place of knowing, of consciousness. And in many ways, shamans train themselves to navigate, to actually be in the seen and the unseen world all at the same time, in our regular consciousness and in the shamanic consciousness all at the same time. That's the training that I'm trying to help people learn, is to be able to be present in this world and also communicate to the other world. And it is a fascinating world, because we're really not alone. You know, we have our ancestors surrounding us. We have our other spirits all around us, and they, in many ways, and I'm sure you know, they influence how we live our life. Some of them are responsible for pain that we suffer. Some responsible for our our profession that we choose, and we think that we do choose them, but it's actually come from our ancestor, from our grandmothers and grandfathers and other entities. And so through what we call shamanic journey, or transforming into shamanic consciousness, you can start connecting to spirit. And some people, like me, can actually see them in holographic form, and they can communicate with them and bring those information to the patient. And it's quite amazing, because those entities are here, and they need to be communicated. They're not all bad. Sometimes they're just looking for recognition.
Yeah, and it's you know, as you talk about it, one can't help but realize that we seem to be coming full circle. Like we once were born with the inherent knowledge of living in this multidimensional universe, but this knowledge has been filtered out of us by, you know, society and culture and religion. Yeah. And technology. And I guess that's one of your roles, is to get people to recognize that they are truly part of the universe and connected all the time, no?
Yes. You know, when I started on this journey, I thought that the shamans in the Andes and in the jungles are like very special people, that they are really different species of humans. And my teacher from the jungle, from Brazil, used to say that we are all shamans in training, that we are all born with everything that we need to be able to heal and have visions. And the truth is that unconsciously we are those people. We have dreams at night that we are visioning, that those are messages that come from spirit. We just discount them. We have daydreaming. We have thoughts that comes to us from unknown source, and we just discount them as a... We have deja vus. We have other communications with spirit that we don't realize that these are a gift from spirit. And in the same way, we do healing. You know, when you speak nicely to a person, or when you sing a song to someone, or when you hug someone, when you give somebody a glass of water, you're becoming a healer. And it's all in our DNA, because I personally believe that those qualities in ourselves to be healers, or shaman, what we call today, are ingrained in our DNA and in a purpose for continue our survival. And so we're using all our senses, the touch, the sight, the talk, the voice, all of those, and include the sixth sense, is really part of the way we program to see the world, encompass the world, and protect ourselves and protect the families all around us.
Mm. You know, you make me think, Itzhak, when you talk about being ingrained in the DNA. You know, over the years, you know, we've interviewed, you know, medical doctors who study DMT, you know, under clinical conditions, and you're a perfect person to ask this because it's been bothering me for years, and that why would DMT, which is a component of the traditional, you know, medicines and shamanic culture like ayahuasca and San Pedro, why would all humans and all animals and all plants have this supposedly hallucinogenic substance called DMT as part of our makeup? I mean, if you believe in design, there would have to be some purpose to that. So could it be that this is nature's way of giving us and all living conscious entities access to other realms? I mean, perhaps that's what you activate when you do your healing ceremonies.
Oh, absolutely. I think that our mistake is to think that we are separated, that there are two different worlds, the physical world and the spiritual world. That's never really the experience of indigenous people. Indigenous people always live in that knowledge, in that reality, that the reality is both.
Right.
And so they naturally develop the ability to foresee the future, to foresee where you go hunting, to foresee how the crops will grow, to foresee how energies influence their health. We in the North or the Western world, we were cut off for many years. And I think that's really what the reason why alternative healing and shamanic healing experiencing such a great renaissance is because of that, because people want to reconnect to their natural gifts. They don't want to feel disconnected, that they give all their powers to the teachers, all their powers to the priests, and all the power to the doctors, and all the power for the government, and all the powers to other power sources or power centers, and except for themselves. And shamanism teaches you to rely on your natural gift, what God actually gave you, which is the ability to journey, the ability to see in the other world and to heal here and in this world. And it's a great feeling to know that you have all these resources in your hand, and you don't have to rely on other people and not listen to what other people fate for you. You can decide it. You don't have to let other people decide for you. And each person's experience is very different. So there is a great respect for each person's experience and reality.
And I love the way in the shamanic culture, all, you know, plants are referred to as medicine.
Of course.
I mean, how do they say, like the natural pharmacy? I mean, I think, and just from that other part of your work in the healing, we have so much to learn when we identify all of these natural medicines that can take the place of these pharmaceuticals that we seem to be so reliant upon today.
Well, you know, we're talking about ayahuasca and San Pedro and other wachuma and other plants as a medicine, a plant's medicine. But I actually think that kale is a medicine.
Yeah.
Banana is a medicine.
Right.
All those foods that we eat are medicine. We have to have a consciousness that those plants are here for our own health, and each one of them have a purpose, a healing purpose for ourselves. So,
absolutely,
we can't eat just blindly. Every plant is a medicine, and you know, like a weeping willow is an aspirin, and so a lot of the medicine that we are today take as pills came from plants.
And I know you're certainly doing your part in educating us all about that. We have been talking with Itzhak Birie, And Itzhak's website is itzhakbeery.com, I-T-Z-H-A-K-B-E-E-R-Y. And his latest book is called Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. His prior book was The Gift of Shamanism. So we're going to go to a break, and we come back. There's a lot more to talk about with Itzhak, so please stay with us. We'll be back in a few moments.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Itzhak Beery. Our sponsor is iGiveOn, the Giver's Marketplace, and they can be found at iGiveOn.com. Now, to bring our listeners up to date on Forever Family Foundation happenings, we want to remind everybody to always check the events page on our website for all information on events and announcement at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And all reservations for all of our events and our webinars and everything can be made online. We have next a few free meetings coming up in August. We have our Visionary Explorers on August 12th from 2 p.m. Eastern. That's 11 a.m. Pacific. This is an online group requiring pre-registration into the group. We have our Afterlife Discussion Group on August 22nd in Cold Spring Harbor, New York. That meets at 6:45 p.m. And our Afterlife Discussion Group on August 27th in Crown Point, Indiana, meets at 2:30 p.m. Our next webinar of the year is Receiving and Interpreting Spirit Communication. That's on August 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern. It features a Forever Family Foundation Certified Medium panel of Joanne Gerber, David Campbell, and Amy Utzman, who will be responding to attendee questions following their presentations. Our annual grief retreat last month was filled to capacity. For those who may have been closed out of this great annual retreat, do not fear, as we have arranged for a winter retreat in warm and beautiful Florida this coming January 5th through 7th, 2018. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend an all-inclusive weekend featuring spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joseph Shields, Janet Nohavik, and Doreen Malloy, who will be working alongside Dr. Mo Hanna and the rest of our professional staff. The weekend also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. Our Oceanside New York event on August 25th, Visitation Rites, with Forever Family Foundation certified medium Lynn LeClaire, is all sold out. However, we do have a fabulous New York event set for Sunday, October 29th. The Afterlife Luncheon is a five-hour event that includes a scrumptious lunch. Join us as New York Times bestselling author Leslie Kane, author of Surviving Death, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for an Afterlife, will be joined by extraordinary medium Laura Lynn Jackson, author of New York Times bestseller The Light Between Us, Stories from Heaven, Lessons from for the Living. For a compelling afternoon of learning and spirit communication, reservations for this event have been steady, so you might want to reserve your seat soon if you're thinking of attending. Our Holidays Past raffle is up and running, so please help us out by buying some raffles, lots of raffles, to win as many as five readings with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Renata Santarelli, Renee Buck, Eliza Ray, Catherine Nadel, and Neil Sapowski. It's only $5 to enter. And please, please, please keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Back to you, Bob.
And back with Itzhak Beery. Website is itzhakbeery.com. And the book, Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. Itzhak, I know that you mentioned shamans generally, pass down the ancient wisdom in an oral tradition. You decided to put a lot of the information in book form, and I sense that you did that in an effort to let people recognize that we should pay attention to this ancient wisdom, that maybe we're in danger of losing it if we don't stop paying attention. Our technology continues to explode. So was that one of the reasons that you wrote the book, Shamanic Healing? Are you trying to reconnect people with the ancient wisdom?
Of course, because Ipu Piara, the shamanist that was my teacher for 12 years, when he was born in 1943, there was 2,400 of the Uruwu tribe, the people from the south, from Brazil. When he passed away 5 years ago, he was the last shaman, and maybe there was two or three more people left from his tribe, and with them, the language and the teachings and the knowledge about plants and the way of healing and all their wisdom were gone. And so I
try to encourage Ipupiara to put this all in writing. But, you know, in the shamanic tradition, it's usually a word of mouth. It's about sharing, sitting in front of the fire or on the canoe and telling jokes and teaching the healing. It's not a big deal, you know. It's like you just share it. But we don't have that anymore. We don't have the elders that to teach us. And so, quite a few of my other teachers, Bibi in the jungle and in the Amazon, and Sheree, another Kanamari elder, and my teacher from Ecuador, some of them passed away. How do we take all these beautiful, amazing teachings, and we pass it on to other people? So I tried to do that in this book. That's why I wrote it in such a detailed way, all the exercises and all the spiritual meaning and the physical meaning of all these teachings, in a way to see if I can pass it on to other people. I was so privileged to be with these people and meet so many people from Siberia to Mongolia to Inuit to Native Americans to so many people in South America. Not too many people can in their lifetime can meet these people and learn. I think it was my duty to share it. And also I want to say that, you know, I also, part of how I started it is by reading a book by Hank Wasserman. So there is, of course, the shamanic tradition of passing on by word of mouth, but we are not in that society. We are so spread out. We are so technological driven, and we don't have much community now. So we have to do that, I think.
Yeah, you wrote something in the book. I made note of. You wrote that when we do not succumb to the bad forces of our negative impulses, we create happiness in the upper worlds, and the light of happiness spreads down into the lower worlds. So, were you speaking in the general sense of improving the greater consciousness and improving our lives, or are we talking about the personal level where our thoughts, positive and negative, return to us individually?
Well, you know, that quote is actually not mine. It was actually my great-grandfather.
Oh, your great-grandfather, okay.
Yes, he was a Kabbalistic rabbi and a healer in Poland. I only found about it a few years ago, totally by coincidence, like 20 years after I started to do this work. And I also worked with the evil and the good and evil part, because there's so much in my work like that, and I work with that a lot with Ipupiara about the Akuras, evil spirits of the jungle that manifested in our world. But this, my grandfather, Menachem Zundel Margulis, he devoted his life to bring light to the upper worlds. So when the upper worlds will be full of light, that light will permeate down into the lower world, and that lower world will start to light up too. But he also recognized that this fight between good and evil is part of the purpose of human being on this earth, is for us to claim the light. To bring balance between that, so one side would not, so it would be more light than darkness, but we do need the darkness, but we can't have total darkness. And we actually, if you look politically, what's happening now is very much like that. I mean, if you look at it in good and evil part, that there are the evil part and the light part that are fighting with each other, and that's a huge cosmic battle that we have continuously in our human existence and consciousness.
So you, in the course of your work in the healing, I mean, you, as you mentioned in the book, I mean, it's our consciousness is all about vibrating energy, and you send high-frequency positive energy to help heal people. So is the reverse also true? I mean, have you had occasions where you sent negative energy to people?
Oh, no, I don't do that.
I don't want to.
My teacher from the Andes, Don Jose Joaquin Pineda, warned me very early on that he said that when you start using negative energy on other people, and you can do that, you know, our mind is so powerful that you can either send good energy or bad energy, when you send bad energy, that energy always comes in like a boomerang and hits you back. And so I heal a lot of people who have been cursed or sent jealousy and evil eye. I can see how that works. And he does too in Ecuador. He's, a lot of shamans come to him to remove that negative energy that came to hit them, you know, because they were sending negative energy. So you have to be very careful not to fall into that trap of power or money that usually associate with using negative energy or evil energy.
So I know we're almost out of time, but where do you see the future of shamanism? Because I have to tell you that, you know, years ago it was rare that you heard about or read about or encountered a shaman, and today there seems to be somewhat of a renaissance or an explosion of shamans, and I suspect that there are a lot of people that are just trying to take advantage or, you know, using it for the wrong methods, which I know must trouble you. But so, where do you see the future of shamanism going forward?
Well, you know, I'm very encouraged. I'm very optimistic because, like Ipo Piara said, that we are all shamans in training. And so I encourage people to try to cultivate their power, to use it good, but to also to use it in honorable way. And a lot of what Ipo Piara was talking about is that it was that white people or the people in our society get really excited about it and they want to improve on it. They want to give it a different name, like shamanic Reiki and shamanic yoga and shamanic this and shamanic that, instead of going deeper into the practice, becoming more traditionalist. That the whole idea of changing shamanism or making it more popular, it's because you don't want to go deeper into it. Because it's a really rich and beautiful and deep work, and so I see a lot of people who start and they get really excited and then they do all kind of different things. But you know, over time, the better people, the more serious people stay, and the other people leave. And in the same way, ayahuasca or plant medicine is a great gate for people who are curious. It's open up their mind. You have to be very respectful. You have to understand what you're doing. And I have a lot of criticism for the ayahuasca industry. But on the other hand, some people who do that do change their life. And they do change in a way that is more honorable to communities and devoting their time now in a higher consciousness to help other people. And we are all part of that conscious revolution that started with the new Bakhtun and the new Pachacuti, that is the prophecies of South America, of the new time, the new change of time,
time of new healing, new cooperation between feminine and energies and masculine energy. So there will be struggle, but I think that it's I'm very optimistic that more people should experience that power that they have in their hands and use it for a better world.
It's like you're unfortunately out of time. You're going to have to come back because there's so much more to talk about. Talking with Itzhak Beery, I recommend both of his books. The latest one, Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. In addition to talking about the practice itself, he also gives a lot of hands-on techniques and teachings and ceremonies. So you can read more about that by picking up that book. There's a link to it on our website. Again, itzhakbeery.com. Itzhak, thanks so much for joining us, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
I would love that anytime.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening, everybody.
Okay. Have a good night.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Catherine Pye, Alex Hanna, Veronica James, Rich LeBly, Lauren Ramnath, Vince Mataya, Isabel Ginsberg, Diane Archangel, James Rafferty, Donna Mello, Stanley Mueller, Marianne Pierschka, Glenna Irwin, David Haith, Michael Tim, Helen Montaldo, Cynthia Post, Evelyn Ingram, Tina Young, Matt Mello, Linda Ellis, Eddie Coons, Sandy Rabel, Ed O'Brien. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.